By Willis and Shante. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, and I'm in the studio with my two co-hosts, Earlene Anthony and Tyrone Robinson. This week we will be talking about the Black community in Proposition 8, with writer and civil rights activist Terry Angel Mason, and also an in-studio Black History Month performance by Lee Shaw from Catch the Tiger, a play about Marcus Garvey and J. Edgar Hoover. But right now, I have on the line musicians Willis and Shante of Positive Light Ministry, who will be performing Sunday, March the 25th, 2012 at 3 o'clock at the Exchange, located at 114 West 5th Street, downtown Los Angeles. How you doing, Willis and Shante?
Are we good?
Good.
Hey.
Hey.
Fine, fine. Glad to hear from you. Glad to have you on the show. Can you tell us the inspiration for the song Butterfly?
Well, actually, just working down in the Skid Row area for a while, I was at Gladys Park, and if you know about Gladys Park, there's, you know, people that I'll assume that are homeless people, and there are people selling drugs and people buying drugs and other things going on. And I thought to myself that there's nothing really growing here, that this is a park, but there was not the flowers or the butterflies or you know, it wasn't that day when I looked around anything positive going on. I'm not saying that I've seen positive things happen in Gladys Park, but that day there wasn't anything happening, and that's where the inspiration came.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful song with a beautiful message. Now, Willis and Shante, can you tell us what is the mission and goal of Positive Light Ministries?
The mission of Positive Light is to teach children about Christ first and what Christ represents, and through our music and through art and drama, we want to teach kids how it's important to have a strong work ethic and be committed to something, to nurture and develop their gifts and talents and give them self-confidence through practicing these skills.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long Positive Light Ministry been in existence?
Been around 12 years.
12 years. Now, can you tell us a little about each one of you? Tell us about your background and how you got into singing and playing the guitar and all of that.
Well, my dad gave me a guitar when I was about 7, and we've always had, you know, something musical around the house. Even though we were not musicians, we, you know, basically just play by ear. I got into music more when I started working with the kids to be able to teach them how to play. I learned how to play better myself. And Shante?
I got into guitar through Willis. He was volunteering at an after-school program that I went to while I was living on Skid Row. And he taught me how to play guitar, and I started working with him more and more each week, learning, and he asked me if I wanted to be a part of Positive Light Ministries, and I said yes, and that's how I got here today.
That's interesting. Now, hey, Willis and Chantel, I got Earlene here also. She wanted to have a comment or ask you a question or something.
Hey, Willis and Chantel. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Good. Well, when I was on Skid Row, I knew Willis, and he didn't teach me to play the guitar. But I'm glad to know both of you, because you've really been an inspiration. Because, you know, we both have a heart for working with the young people. And what you're doing is an inspiration.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to throw that right back at you, Earlene. I remember you telling me about OG, the street artist.
And, right.
He came into our program and helped the kids with art projects. And just seeing you doing positive things, you know, back at that time, I think that's probably been about 5 years ago or more.
Probably, uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And what you and Melvin are doing, we appreciate, because you're keeping the community moving. You guys are down there keeping things going and giving people things to look forward to. So that's basically, in my opinion, what it's all about. People helping people to stir up positive energy.
Right. And, of course, we're going to be doing some projects together, especially with the young people, because we have a lot of people, young people up at USC called the Peace Kids that we're working with, and some others. But we really want to get something for the young people in the Skid Row area.
We'd be very pleased to get together with you guys and put something together.
Okay, looking forward to it. Now, Willis and Shante, for those who would like to get in contact with you about performing, what is your contact information?
Well, Melvin, don't mean to sound negative or anything, but we perform for you guys, and we have a really busy schedule and work, and when you guys help ask us to come up and do something, then we feel honored and obligated to come down and help. So we don't really perform for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But as far as our contact information, Shante can give you that. And
if you would like to contact us, our number is 951-789-1046.
Oh, that's beautiful. And it's so great to hear from you, too. And thank you very much. And we will be looking forward to the performance on March the 25th at 3:00 at the Exchange. So once again, thank you, Willis and Shante.
Thank you.
All right. Thank
bye-bye.
You, Melvin and Earlene.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Now, once again, Willis and Shante will be performing Sunday, March the 25th, 2012 at 3 o'clock at the Exchange, located at 114 West 5th Street, downtown Los Angeles. Now, I'm delighted to have in the studio author, poet, singer, songwriter, and civil rights activist, Terry Angel Mason. He was a child prodigy, gifted with the ability to write, compose music, and play the piano at an early age. He is a Pulitzer Prize nominee and a bishop in the Christian Church and an advocate and national spokesman for HIV/AIDS awareness. His latest book is entitled Love Won't Let Me Be Silent. Angel, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, can you tell us a little about your book, Love Won't Let Me Be Silent?
Love Won't Let Me Be Silent, Melvin, is a collection of writings that includes poetry, articles, some fiction stories, and it basically talks about Prop 8, which of course we'll be discussing tonight, and it shows same-gender loving people, African Americans, I feel, in a more positive light than they've been presented in the past.
Oh, wonderful. Now, how did you become an advocate for HIV/AIDS awareness?
Well, I was, my brother Daryl was a promoter who promoted Madonna's first album and actually received many platinum awards for promoting people. He was diagnosed with AIDS when it first came out. And eventually passed away. Then later, as years went by, I was just recently selected by Real Health Magazine as the advocate for Real Health Magazine, then by several organizations like the San Diego Neighborhood House Association, and finally the National Black HIV/AIDS Awareness Organization just selected me as a National AIDS spokesperson.
Oh, wonderful. Now, you also work with inmates coming out of the prison system. Can you tell us about that and the importance of that?
Oh, man, I can't stress to talk enough about that. Melvin, there are so many incarcerated African-American females and males, and additionally Latino females and males who are in the prison system. And I got into that by pastoring. When I first founded my first church, I just was amazed at how many of us either had friends or relatives incarcerated, and it seemed inconceivable not to have a ministry to these individuals. And so I just began doing it. It escalated to where I had over 5,000 inmates contacting our church, and I actually, before I actually founded my second church, that the title of bishop was inferred upon me simply because I had so many pastors who were inmates that I had trained in the prison system ministering to inmates all over the country.
Yeah, because that's a very important subject. They got this new process called realignment where they just released quite a few of the low-level inmates coming back to the community. So I definitely think HIV/AIDS awareness education is very important for the community members.
It is.
Now, can you talk a little about the misconception that HIV/AIDS is a gay disease?
You know, this is probably the thing I emphasized this when I was on Channel 5 last week. I emphasized this because we think, because HIV/AIDS awareness was brought to our attention by the gay community, we have a tendency to think of it as a gay disease. That has been our undoing. That is the reason why the virus was able to advance quickly, Melvin. A little bit of background, and I'll say this fast. When HIV was identified, of course, it went by many names, GRIDS and GRID and different things. But the gay community went to the Congress and soliciting funds for study. But because they thought it was just something that happened to gay people, they did not fund it properly. They gave, I think, $20,000 for funding of HIV/AIDS. That's not even enough to pay a man that sweeps the floor. You understand what I'm saying? And the reason I'm bringing that up is because with the proper funding, we would have been able to be much further ahead in research and probably maybe even have a cure now, had it been not viewed that way, mm-hmm. from a discriminant. Basically, what Congress was saying was, you got it, we don't like you as gay people, and we don't care if you die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so you see how that can come back to hurt us,
yes.
and haunt us.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until it crossed the line into the normal society.
That's right. Our people who they considered normal, mm-hmm. heterosexuals.
There you go.
But you know, the problem with this is no virus is gay or straight. A common cold is not a gay cold.
Yeah.
HIV is not a gay virus. Mm-hmm. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. So it's all about education.
We have to get rid of that. Mm-hmm. That idea that that idea is what has hurt the African American community so, and is what has given it wings to explode, mm-hmm. into our population.
Yes, yes. Now, how is the music that influenced our young people connected with the rise of HIV/AIDS in our community?
Melvin Ishmael.
Yes.
I get in trouble with this question all the time. But I boldly state that our children, see, there's a principle in the Bible, and it talks about meditating on the word. And meditation brings about transformation. So anything that you meditate on all the time is going to affect and transform your thinking. Keep in mind, our children are listening day in and day out, headed to school on buses, on trains, listening to rap music. And it's undeniable, especially when you get into gangster rap, it's undeniable that it has a lot of sexual connotations in it. It is inspiring our youth to become more sexually active than ever in any generation. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that the artists in the R&B and hip-hop culture are not telling our young people, if you're going to go out there and sexually experiment, you must protect yourself. That message is not in the context of their lyrics.
Mm-hmm. And you think it's very important for them to deal with that aspect of it also.
Right, because the reality is I'm a believer, I'm a Christian, and I know that that many people who do secular music are not going to change their views. But if they're not going to change their views, then they should at least want to protect our children. Because when 13-year-old kids come up HIV positive,
yes.
can you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
That's just not a
serious
good thing.
Point.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, right now, we're going to take a short break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back with our guest, Angel Mason, and discuss the Black community and Proposition 8.
This is the community calendar for February, actually the last event for February. Tuesday, February 28th at 8 p.m., the Emerging Leaders Program at USC is presenting Drama Stage Qumran. Actually, they're featuring a special performance of a stage play by Drama Stage Qumran called Nailheads, written and directed by Melvin Ishmael Johnson. The cast for the play is Francie Joy, Andrea Ross, Isaac Clay, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, Lee Shaw, Earlene Anthony, and Jerome St. Jerome. The play is about 1 hour in length, and it calls the attention to the 80,000 to 100,000 homeless people living on the streets in the county of Los Angeles. And it shows it through multimedia, drama, poetry, and music. And this is a free event, and all are invited to attend. The location is 3501 Truesdale, that's Trousedale Parkway, Mark Tabor Hall of Humanities, Lecture Hall 102. And this is near the intersection of 34th Street and Truesdale Parkway, or Jefferson and Hoover, behind the United University Church. Or for more information, you can call 323-850-4436. And if you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. And once again, our call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, now we're back with our, thank you, Miss Earlene Anthony. We're back with our guest, Terry Angel Mason. And I want to talk about Proposition 8 and the Black community response. But first, let me define Proposition 8 before we get into a discussion of it. I'm reading from Wikipedia, and they say, Proposition 8, ballot title, eliminates rights of same-sex couple to marry. The initiative constitutional amendment called California Marriage Protection Act by proponents. It was a ballot proposition and constitutional amendment passed in November 2008 state elections. The measure added a new provision, Section 7.5 of the Declaration of Rights to the California Constitution, which provides that only marriage between a man and a woman is valid or recognized in California. And also the proponents of the constitutional amendment argue that exclusively heterosexual marriage was an essential institution of society, that leaving the Constitution unchanged would result in public schools teaching our kids that gay marriage is okay and that gays do not have the right to redefine marriage for everyone else. The opponents argue that the freedom to marry is fundamental to our society, that the California Constitution should guarantee the same freedom and rights to everyone, and that the proposition mandates one set of rules for gays and lesbian couples and another set for everyone else. They also argue that equality under the law is a fundamental constitutional guarantee. Okay. Now, I want to talk about that. Can you tell us, Angel, why the Black community, especially the Black church, is so against same-sex marriage?
Wow. We can be here all night on that one. Melvin, it's many, many reasons. I'll start with one, and that is the Black church feels that same-sex unions are in opposition to God's word. That's the main thing. They feel that it's in opposition to his word, and because it is, that it's sinful, it can never be sanctioned by God, it can never be blessed by God. And so that's the main theme running through their argument. There are things that are going on in terms of what's spiritual and what's legal, and we wrestle with this in other areas, Melvin, when it comes to other issues. The church, how far should they go in terms of law, civil law, and when they should not be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a whole nother thing, you know, mm-hmm. going on there. But I basically it's this thing that God could not, would not sanction it, and therefore because they are believers, they cannot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the next question I want to ask. Should religion influence the laws of our nation, like marriage in the family?
This is a difficult question. And the reason I say that is, first of all, you should know that I unashamedly am a Christian. However, I am totally against extremists, any individual, no matter what religion they are, that anytime religion will undo what's in the Constitution, that religion has gone too far. And that is the reason why our founding fathers came to this country, so that religious institutions could not strip us of civil rights that every human being has a right to. So, mm-hmm. it's, it, you know, my spiritual relationship, not religion, influences me to treat men with love and integrity. And if I'm walking in love and integrity, then I cannot strip other individuals of civil rights, because the Bible supports civil rights for individuals. It does emphatically support.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me this. Is there a difference between marriage as a religious institution and marriage as a legal institution? Can you comment a little on that?
Wow, I need Barack Obama here right now. Our president is wonderful. In the eyes of the church, it is. In the eyes of church, it's actually a combination of both. But for those who are not everyone's, now here's a hard pill to swallow for the church. They don't understand it. Everybody's not a believer. That's reality. And so we cannot strip unbelievers of civil rights because they don't believe as we do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see? Mm-hmm. Now, this was why I didn't have an argument, and I get a lot of flack because of this, with the titles being different, the names being different, civil union marriage. I never had a problem with that. If or provided that both civil unions and marriage in a heterosexual covenant receive the same rights.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody has been not listening. They have not really been listening to Barack Obama, because from the very beginning, he has said way back in 2008, I believe in civil unions, but for marriage equality rights for people who have civil unions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of got swept under the rug. Nobody wanted to hear that. But he has been saying that since before he became president.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, now the next question. Do you know of any societies in the past where same-sex marriage was legal?
I don't know from a historical standpoint of any culture or society, but I can say this. Like your guest whom you had here last week, that I really thoroughly enjoyed her interview.
Mm-hmm.
But love is a matter of the heart. And marriage, while we have that name, is really a spiritual connection between two individuals. I'm sure, while I may not be aware of it, of the cultures where that was legal or was not, it has always been, all throughout history, people spiritually bound together in covenant, and that is a marriage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there any comparison when interracial marriage was illegal and what is happening now with same-sex marriage? What do you think about that?
African Americans hate this question that are in the church. Do you know why? They hate it when same-gender loving people bring this up, because they have this crazy idea that civil rights, I want to stand on a mountaintop. They have this crazy idea that civil rights, you can't bring what the gay community is, or you can't compare that to what the African American community experienced, and so it therefore cannot be civil rights. How dare you compare the two? And I hear that and I go, okay, no, wait a minute. I'm African American and I understand where we came from. I understand how we got here. I understand how many of us died when we were getting here. I understand what my forefathers did in order for me to be a Pulitzer nominee, to be on television and radio. I stand on their shoulders. I understand that. But I also know that civil rights is more than what African Americans experience. Jews deserve civil rights. Asians deserve civil rights. They went through types of Holocaust. Do you follow? But mm-hmm. So we don't say that they don't deserve civil rights because they were Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see how crazy that idea is?
Yes.
And so this is what we do with same-gender loving people. We say, well, they didn't go through what we went through. But I'm here to tell you, I have seen the children of African-American same-gender loving men and women. I've seen their children beat on buses and trains. I've seen them shot. I've seen them murdered. And I've seen them and read articles about how their bodies were left maimed, cut on fences.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the discrimination in housing. I've seen it. I've seen the discrimination when couples go to the hospitals and they cannot visit their loved ones. Or, as you said, Melvin, earlier, when families swoop in, mothers and fathers swoop in and take control of a situation where that person has been in that individual's life all their life, and now the family member comes and think they can control and take away all of their rights and mm-hmm. goods and everything else.
Yeah.
So when African Americans do that, I'm quick to correct them and tell them that civil rights is something that every single American has a right to, mm-hmm. no matter what the background or the struggle was.
Good point.
Thank you.
A question from Earlene and then Tyrone.
I really don't have a question right now because we were talking off air before we came on.
Yes.
And he hit on a lot of points that I have earlier been discussing with you. So I don't really have a question at this time.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Tyrone.
Hi.
Hi, Tyrone.
You know, it was a kiss on the cheek that betrayed Christ, but it was a kiss of friendship. And all relationships, I believe, begin with friendships, mm-hmm. no matter what they are or who they're with. Martin Luther King said over and over and over again that the victories of civil rights were for everyone, black, white, Mexicans, mm. the whole thing. But my question is, in lieu of all these events in our public schools here in Los Angeles, what do you think about the combined push of African American ministers arguing that children would be subjected to pro-gay curriculums in the classrooms?
I love this question.
See, I changed up on him.
Tyrone, my God, I wish I could come over in that seat and give you $1 billion.
You may not use that.
You may not know, but some time ago, not long ago, Tyrone, and mm-hmm. I know you don't know this. That's why I'm just so grateful you asked this question. Mm-hmm. The governor was approached by the LGBT community because so many of the children were being bullied, murdered, and killed in school. And so SB 48 was born.
Okay.
And the Fair Education Act. I'm just amazed. This is so amazing. I'm just so grateful you asked me this question. Mm-hmm. African American ministers grouped together and recently met at a pastor who now pastors a church where I grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
He called a prayer meeting of community leaders from all over the city mm-hmm. To oppose SB 48 because they felt that it was sexualized education. But SB 48, the Fair Act Education Act, simply says that history taught in school they cannot discriminate against anyone. That is the basis of it. They cannot leave it out. And how many years have African Americans had to study African American history from regular history? I mean, it's so many things have been deleted.
Yes.
So it was felt, and I feel the same way, that when we do not cut out the accomplishments or achievements of same gender loving people, no matter what their race, then it builds a pride in other same gender loving people to know that they can achieve the same and excel. But also what it does to the heterosexual students is it says to them, well, these are great achievements and these people are to be respected. These people should be treated with dignity. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. then what it does is it cuts down on the abuse of students.
Mm-hmm.
And so what these pastors did, they grouped together, they threw out some LGBT activists out of the meeting. It became a big issue in this city. Mm-hmm. I ended up on the radio and actually confronting the pastor that did do this mm-hmm. and ended up in several magazine articles about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you didn't know that.
No.
When you asked that question, but now they gather signatures to stop it, but weren't unable to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But it is coming up again and it will be a future fight for me in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming back again to mm-hmm. haunt us.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Can you update us on what's happening with Proposition 8?
Well, of course, you know that it. This is just so bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
It's first of all, it the three Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal judges that heard the matter came up with the same conclusion that the previous Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals judge that had heard this came up with, and basically that it was unconstitutional to deny same gender loving people the right to marry. I mean, God, did it really take a rocket scientist to figure that one out? Mm-hmm. And so they lost with Judge Walker, and then they lost on this front. And now what they're doing is they're trying to get the complete Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals judges to hear it. And if that happens, one judge will be appointed and 10 others will randomly be appointed to hear it again. I think they're about to shoot themselves in the foot again, mm-hmm. because they're losing on every front. And if the Ninth Circuit full court decides to hear this case and they lose again, when they go to the Supreme Court, that's not going to look real good. Mm-hmm. Personally, I'm insulted as a same gender loving person that we're even giving these people this opportunity to appeal. Because what if that had happened when civil rights was going on as far as African Americans? Well, we just have to wait until they take it to the next highest court.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, when the three judges voted and came to the same conclusion that Von Walker, I believe was his name, Judge Von Walker voted, conclusion he came to, and that should have been the end of the matter. Mm-hmm. Same gender loving people from that day, at that point, should have been able to marry. And I personally, my personal feelings that we are accommodating people who are discriminating and people who are being bigots. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks can be mad, but they'll get over it. But that's what we're doing.
Let me ask you this, because what's surprising mm-hmm. to me is I see in the news that a lot of conservative areas of the United States and states, mm-hmm. you know, that have allowed, from yes. a legal point of view. And you would look at California, you know, with who have had a history of huge gay populations,
right.
you know, like up North Castro District,
yes.
Hillcrest District,
right.
Here West Hollywood.
Exactly.
Why is it such a big battle in California?
Well, you've got to understand that that what happened was when Prop 8 came up, that many white evangelical ministers and many people from the Mormon Church and Catholic Church infused the African-American churches. They infused them and began to influence them to vote against this proposition. You're seeing with in their presidential consideration as far as the Republican candidate, the power of money.
Yeah.
The power of money. And you may not know this, Ishmael, which mm-hmm. I think is a beautiful name. You may not know this, but the Democratic Party sent out, during the time that President Barack Obama was elected, sent out brochures saying that they was in support of same-sex mm-hmm. unions.
Yes.
I have
yes.
it. I still
yes.
have it.
Yes.
I kept yes. it. They sent out saying, but the power of the Mormon Church, the money behind the Catholic Church, and for y'all who are Mormons mm-hmm. and Catholics, mm-hmm. don't be mad, because I played in Catholic churches half my life, and I still do minister in Catholic churches, but I don't agree with this area. And so they funded, you know, poured all of this money into funding this proposition so it would not be pushed through. And then one thing I bring up in Love Won't Let Me Be Silent is the ambiguous language of the proposition. And what I mean by that is yes meant no and no meant yes. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yes. It's just like what Barack Obama said in his mm-hmm. own words, the definition of marriage. He says one thing, but then, you know, they twist it. Mm-hmm. I believe marriage is a union between a man and a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, for me as a Christian, it is also a sacred union. God is in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his commentary mm-hmm. during his election.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like you said, they came out with the robocalls. They came out with the literature saying mm-hmm. that, oh, he's for it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But
yeah, what they did is they took what Barack Obama said and took it to an extreme. But they purposely never printed that he said, "I believe that people who have civil unions should be given the same equal rights as individuals who have full marriage equality, that heterosexuals." And so people would say all the time, "Well, they got civil unions, they got domestic partnerships, but it's not the same. Anybody who takes 5 minutes of their time to research the difference will discover that people who have civil unions and domestic partnerships do not have full marriage equality." Mm-hmm. And I personally, the Bible says God hates false weights, discrimination. The Bible says he hates those things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that when we tell a group of people, you know, let me just sum it up by saying this. Melissa Etheridge said it better than anyone else could say it. She said, "You have no rights to demand taxes of me and then tell me I cannot have equal rights." Mm-hmm. So I personally feel like if the United States is not going to allow every person that lives here to have equal rights, then they do not, under the Constitution, have a right to extract taxes from them and from those individuals.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Mm-hmm. Good point. Mm-hmm. Now, can you tell us a little about your upcoming book? Before we close out.
My new book is called They Say That I'm Broken, and it deals with many of the theological questions that we could not get into tonight. You can go to my website, which is www.terryangelmason.com. There you can find not only information about this book that is coming out, but you can hear audio messages, which I encourage you to listen to on the link called Podcast Page for Lovers. And Melvin, I don't want to forget to say that on my website is a helpful link for parents, pastors, and same gender loving people of any age that may be struggling with reconciling their sexuality and spirituality. That link is called "Lord, My Child is Gay," named after an excerpt from my first book, "Love Won't Let Me Be Silent."
Mm-hmm. One question before we close out. You just brought it up. How about the parents that feel that, how do they deal with if they see that their child is gay at a young age, or they think? What kind of advice would
you
give them?
Thank you for asking. My first thing would be buy the book "Love Won't Let Me Be Silent," or either go to my website and upload the free excerpt called "Lord, My Child is Gay." It's free on my website. Yeah. But then to answer your question would be to love the child, to know that the child, if he is a same gender loving person, is made in the image of God, to not try to impose your life in that child's life. Allow the child to follow his or her divine destiny. Bring them up with spiritual principles from the Bible that will insulate them and isolate them from the bigotry and discrimination they will undoubtedly experience. Love and support them with all your might, and tell them that you're interested in them not finding an individual who will love them and treat them right as a life partner. That's the most thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not
okay.
The sexual orientation.
Okay, Perry Angel Mason. Thank you very much for such an important interview.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Blessings to you.
Now, our last section for tonight is from the Voices from the Ether portion of the show.
Well, if it's Monday night and it's 15 minutes to 9, then it's time for Voices from the Ether. One of the most powerful men in the United States in the last 100 years was J. Edgar Hoover. He would create plan and techniques to deal with the gangsters, radical communists, and just about anybody else he considered to be a threat to the American way of life. But before any of this would happen, J. Edgar Hoover was given a mission of utmost importance, a mission that changed the course of history. What was that mission? It went by the name of Catch the Tiger. And who was the tiger? The tiger was the code name for Marcus Garvey. And now, in our ether section, I would like to present Lee Shaw, Erlene Anthony, and Melvin Ishmael Johnson reading a portion of the play, Catch the Tiger.
Where is the black man's government? Where is his king and kingdom? Where is his president, his country, his army, his navy? I could not find them anywhere, so I declared I will help to make them. If Europe is for the European, then I say Africa for the African. It is time for a new way of thinking. We must begin to think for ourselves and do for ourselves, a new way of doing things. We need programs to really help our people. We have reached a time when every minute and every second must count for something done, something achieved in the cause for Africa. We need the freedom of Africa now. At this moment, I see Ethiopia stretching forth her hands unto God, and I see the angel of God taking up the standards of the red, the black, and the green, saying, follow me. If Europe is for the European, then I say, black people, Africa is for the black people of the world. We say it, we mean it. I've just come back from a 38-state tour in order to study the condition of the black people in America. Let me tell you what I found in this year of 1916. I found that the Negro Leagues of our people have no program. They're just living off their so-called leadership while our people continue groping in the dark looking for a little light. Why are these so-called leaders so dependent upon the support and goodwill of the white man? The so-called Negro leaders of our people seem willing to turn back the clock of progress at the whim of their white support.
Time, 1922. Setting, Bar, Harlem. The scene fades in on Amy Ashwood Garvey and Agent James Amos sitting at a table. Soft music flows in the background. Thank you for meeting me here on such a short notice. I know that you are a very busy lady.
Is that why you call me down here?
No, that's not why I call you down here. I call you down here to ask for your help in a case that we're working on.
What kind of case?
We're in the process of gathering information that might help us in our investigation of Marcus Garvey.
So, what does that have to do with me?
Now, as I was saying, we are in the process of gathering information that might help us in the investigation of Marcus Garvey.
What make you think I'll help you?
Well, I know that you are a businesswoman and that you're very ambitious.
Who told you that?
I got my sources. I also know that you want to cut ties with the UNIA and the whole Nasty Garvey business.
What do you mean, Nasty Garvey business?
I mean the failure of your marriage. How Amy Jock misled you and deceived you into believing that she was your best friend. Some kind of friend, huh? You bring her over here and train her in the movement to take your place as secretary when you marry Garvey? I bet you never thought she would take your place in this hard also. You know something? Life is full of little surprises.
You bastard.
Oh, excuse me?
You heard what I said?
Look, I'm just doing my job.
Your job. That's what all you guys say, your job.
My job is to bring this con man down.
Con man?
That's right, con man.
Is that what you think Marcus Garvey is? Let me tell you something, Agent Amos. I know what Garvey is, and he's no con man. Why don't you ask your boss, Mr. Hoover, if he think Marcus Garvey is a con man? You are afraid of Marcus Garvey for the same reason Mr. Hoover is afraid of him.
And what reason is that?
His words. You are afraid of his words. You know that his words has the power to move people, to organize people. You're just like a lot of these so-called Negro leaders in this country. You're afraid of Marcus Garvey because he has a program to help our people. Now, you guys try to make him appear as a clown. Let me tell you that Marcus Garvey is nobody's clown. He loves the UNIA more than he ever did me. All he wants to do is help his race, our race, like the white man helps their race.
Marcus Garvey is a cancer to race relations.
Why? Because he's telling the truth?
Whose truth? Your truth? My truth? Or the truth? Marcus Garvey is only interested in his truth. That's why he's got to go. And one thing for sure, we're going to get rid of Marcus Garvey.
You people have already tried and tried to get rid of Marcus Garvey, but he's still here. Like when you sent that fool George Tyler to shoot Marcus. 3 shots, 2 hit and 1 miss. 1 priest's head and the other one hit him in the leg. But you people still couldn't get rid of Marcus Garvey. Everybody know that George Tyler was hired to kill Marcus Garvey. That's why he died in custody before he could be brought to trial. How do you tame a tiger, Agent Amos?
How do I tame what?
A tiger. How do you tame a tiger? That's what you guys call Marcus, right? The tiger? How do mere men tame a tiger? You don't. You either cage it or kill it. But if you cage that old tiger, woe for you when you let the tiger out of his cage.
Believe me, when we cage this tiger, there would be no escape.
So say you, Agent Amos. So say you.
Oh, you think this is some kind of game, don't you?
Well, we all like to play a little game sometimes.
This is no game. This is serious business.
Your business or the government.
Let me warn you about something. It's all the same with me. This man, Marcus Garvey, is going all the way down and all the way out. And there's nothing you or I can do to stop it.
So say you.
So say J. Edgar Hoover.
And what's so special about your Mr. Hoover?
You know what they say about Mr. Hoover? They say Mr. Hoover always gets his man.
That's very colorful.
Mr. Hoover is a very determined man. So don't get yourself caught up in a crossfire between Marcus Garvey and J. Edgar Hoover. I don't want to see you get hurt.
Are you worried about my safety, Agent Amos?
I just want you to understand what the reality of the situation is.
I'm not afraid of you, Agent Amos.
Afraid? I don't want you to be afraid of me.
Good. Because you're just a message boy for Mr. Hoover. And I got a message for him.
What's the message?
Tell him don't send a boy to do a man's job.
I'll relay your concern.
You do that. Is that all, Agent Amos?
That's all for now.
The pleasure's all yours.
Time, December the 2nd, 1927. Setting, the U.S. Samarca, New Orleans, Louisiana. The scene fades in on Marcus Garvey standing on the deck of the U.S. Saramaca, New Orleans.
I want to thank my fellow brothers and sisters of New Orleans for your support. I say this to the millions of our members throughout the world. Cheer up, for the work has just begun. We have reached a time when every minute and every second must count for something done in the cause of Africa. Be steadfast, for the work of the UNA shall continue, and I in life and death will continue to serve the cause of our people. It falls to our lots to tear off the shackles that bind Mother Africa. Climb ye the heights of liberty and cease not until ye have planted the banner of the red, the black, and the green upon the hilltops of Africa. I shall live in physical as well as in spiritual to see the day of Africa's glory. Africa's sun is surely and steadily rising and soon shall shed its rays around the world. Look for me in the whirlwind. Look for me in the storm. You're the masters of your own destiny, the architects of your own fate. One God, one aim, one destiny, Africans for Africans.
Look for me in the wind and look for me in the storms. So we did this as part of the conclusion of Black History Month. So the question is, why is it so important to study Marcus Garvey and J. Edgar Hoover? Melvin?
Well, I think what made Marcus Garvey and J. Edgar Hoover such important figures to study is that the Marcus Garvey case was the first major case for the young J. Edgar Hoover. It's where he developed a concept called infiltration and disinformation. And he would take this concept and develop it into the counterintelligence program, better known as COINTELPRO. And it always had two major parts. First, they would take the organization that they're trying to infiltrate, they would make sure they would get a highly intelligent individual, and they would put him inside of that particular organization, the infiltration aspect of it. And because of his intellect and his training, he would move up into the inner circle of that particular organization. And he's able to study that organization, find out the different factions and the conflicts, and to play them off against each other to keep them from achieving their major goals. this was the infiltration aspect of it and the disinformation aspect of it. And the reason it's so important is because they used this concept of infiltration and disinformation that became the counterintelligence program, that became COINTELPRO, to break up organizations like the Black Panthers, the Klan, Dr. King's organization, any organization that J. Edgar Hoover deemed un-American. And why it's so important is because this method is still in existence today.
Yes, this whole thing
about it's happening right now with a lot of the Islamic organization. It was just in the news now how they spying on everybody, et cetera, like that. So this is what make the study of Marcus Garvey and his relationship to J. Edgar Hoover. Because a lot of people know about Marcus Garvey. A lot of people know about J. Edgar Hoover. But very seldom do they put the two together and understand that this is where the young J. Edgar Hoover got his training at in relationship to that.
Well, you know, Fox Mulder was right. How do you say it? Trust no one. So we have just a few more minutes here in the ether, and we have a poet in the house. I was wondering if he can take a few moments that we do have left in the tradition of the ether and share with us a little bit of his writing. What do you think, Melvin?
I would love that.
Okay.
All right. This poem is called I Am Truth. You know, the one you lock out of your heart and out of your mind when you prefer to walk in darkness. I am the one that liberates men from fear, deception, false perceptions, dishonesty, and unethical practices so that they may truly see and experience wholeness and abundance. You know me well, so don't try to deny who I am and what I am by acting like you are unfamiliar with me when you are around your friends. I was the one that you locked away for decades so that you could ease your guilty conscience when you enslaved innocent Africans for hundreds of years. Now, let's keep it real. You know that as long as you could rape the women of Africa and exploit the motherland's male children to work your farms, pick your cotton, and provide the physical labor to build your financial portfolios and institutions, that you would have imprisoned me forever if you could have gotten away with it. I am the one you blindfolded and handcuffed so you could kill Emmett Till in Mississippi and those four innocent black children in Birmingham, Alabama, by bombing Negro churches during the civil rights movement because you wanted to feel superior to the disenfranchised and the poor and maybe even wipe out their existence from the earth. And if the truth be told, I was the one that you nailed to a cross over 2,000 years ago on Calvary's Hill because my cutting-edge message was so radical. It made you see that your man-made rituals, ceremonies, and legalistic practices were not the way to eternal life and had absolutely no redeeming value. Dismissing me from your mind made it easy for you to kill prophets, assassinate presidents and civil rights leaders, persecute countless races and steal their lands, assets, and women because of your endless need to fulfill your greed and fleshly desires.
That's a great piece. What's the name of it again?
It's called I Am Truth.
Ooh, beautiful.
Thank you.
Terry, ain't you amazing?
All right, Melvin. That ends this episode or installment of Voices from the Ether. I turn the show back over to you.
Next week, our special guest will be Glenisha Tiny Shea, CEO and Editor-in-Chief of the Business Magazine. I would like to extend a special thanks to our in-studio guests, Terry Angel Mason and Lee Shaw. On the line with Willis and Shantae, my co-host Tyrone Robinson And a special thanks to Jeremy, Sonia, and the Skid Row Studios. You can check out our past shows of the Coonrown Report on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, skidrow.la, or www.dramastage-coonrown.org. Thank you for tuning in to the Coonrown Report, and I leave you with the song that opens the show, Butterfly by Willis and Shante.
Thank you. we know.